Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Narayanam Namaskritya. Naram Chava Narottamam. Devim Sarasvatim Vyasam. Sato Jayam Udiraya. Nasta praise for Vajrashu. Nityam Bhagavat Sevaya. Bhagavat Yutama Svote. Bhaktir Pavati Naishtiki. Please turn to the verses at the behind your writing pages. So our experiment to help everybody learn these verses is to repeat them daily. Four verses, first four verses. So we'll just read the synonyms, Sanskrit, and translation, just like it's written. Okay? Sa, that, all in unison, please. Sa, that, vi, certainly, pung, sam, for mankind, para, sublime, dharma, occupation, yata, by which, bhakti, devotional service, adhoktaje, unto the transcendence, ahutiki, causeless, aprasi, yata, unbroken, yaya, by which, atma, the self, supersedati, completely satisfied. Savai pum sam paro dharmo, yato bhakti ridhoksaje, amway tiki aprati hata, yayatma suprasidati. The supreme occupation dharma for all humanity is that by which man can attain to loving devotional service unto the transcendent Lord. Such devotional service must be unmotivated and uninterrupted to completely satisfy the self. Vasudeva unto Krishna, Bhagavati unto the Personality of Godhead, Bhakti Yoga, contact of devotional service, Prayojita being applied, Jananayati does produce, Ashu very soon, Vairagyam detachment, Jnanam knowledge, Cha and Yat that which, Avaitikam causes. Vasudeva Bhagavati Bhakti Yoga Prayojita, Janayat Yashuvai Ragyam Yanam Chayada Haitikam. By rendering devotional service unto the Personality of Godhead, Sri Krishna, one immediately acquires causeless knowledge and detachment from the world. Vipada, calamity, Shantu, let there be, Ta, all, Shashvat, again and again, Tatra, there, Tatra, and there, Jagat Guru, O Lord of the Universe, Mavata, your Darshanam, meeting, yet that which Shat is, Apuna, not again, Mava Darshanam, seeing repetition of birth and death. Vipada Santitak Shashvat, Tatra Tatra Jagad Guru, Bhavato Darshanam Yatyad, Apunar Bhava Darshanam. I wish that all these calamities would happen again and again so that we could see you again and again. For sin you mean that we will no longer see repeated birth and death. Tidhat it is, Nirvidyamananam, of those who are completely free from all material desires, Ichitam, of those who are desirous of all sorts of material enjoyment, Hakuta Vayam, free from all doubts and fears, Yoginam, of all those who are self-satisfied, Nirpa, O King, Nirnitam, beside the truth, Hare, of the Lord, Sri Krishna, Nama, holy name, Anu, after someone always, Kirtanam, chanting. Eta nirvajyamananam, ichitam akrito vayam, yoginam nirpanirnitam, harinam anukirtanam. O King, constant chanting of the holy name of the Lord after the ways of the great authorities is the doubtless and fearless way of success for all. including those who are free from all material desires, those who are desirous of all material not enjoyment, and also those who are self-satisfied by dint of transcendental knowledge. So the key to learning verses is repetition. So we'll repeat one of these each week, all four of them each day, and then by the end of the month everyone will be tested to have memorized all four. Okay? Alright? And you will be graded. Now we will give everyone every opportunity to learn these. And they're selected for their bhagavatam by reading from this book. And today's verse is 1343. So we're basically going to read the first three chapters in summary of the Srimad Bhagavatam. Please turn in this book to page 1. I bow to Krishna, Lord of all, the greatest personality. That is Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Lord Krishna, all the universes rise at your decree, and you maintain, destroy, and recreate them endlessly. Lord Krishna, you cause everything, so no one causes you, and you know every atom that you vanquish and renew. You organize the Vedic hymns for all to understand, and sung them in Brahma's own heart as time and space began. You engineered a world of matter, tricking all to chase mirages of enjoyment that dry up without the trace. Combining goodness, darkness, passion, all with matchless flair, you make this world appear important, though it's wisps of air. I contemplate Lord Krishna, self-contained in his abode, forever free of falseness and the same in nature's mode. That is the first verse. By the way, do we have a mic? Okay. Rejecting all pretentious prayers of hidden motivation, the Bhagavad addresses those with worthy inclinations. By separating truth from lies as sharply as a knife, the Bhagavat uproots the reader's miseries in life. Assembled by the writer Vyas in his maturity, the Bhagavat delivers God most expeditiously. What other scripture anywhere so easily imparts ecstatic love of God through revelation in the heart? O thoughtful soul, enjoy this book, the Veda's ripened fruit. Already sweet to those engaged in spiritual pursuit, the Bhagavat grows sweeter when the son of Vyas repeats his father's words, as parrots sweeten mangoes with their beaks. Who is the son of Vyas? Right. And what does Shuka mean? Parrot. Right. So this beautiful allegory is given in the third verse. The parrot bites the mango, tastes it, and in doing so the natural sugars are released, making it even more palatable. By the way, whoever's handling the verse, we're going to need 1343. Who's in charge of the verses? 1343, the same verse? Yes, it's in your, that's today's verse. 1343. So here's chapter 1. The first three verses are an invocation for the Bhagavatam. Now we're getting into the plot in the first chapter. Within a sacred forest glen, 5,000 years ago, the fires of many sages set the early dawn aglow. While planning lengthy sacrifices, all the sages feared their nemesis, the dreaded age of Kali, had appeared. In need of able leadership, the learned sages deemed the sage Sutta Goswami of them all was most esteemed. Withholding urgent questions that the circumstances raised, the sages spoke to Sutta with these pleasant words of praise. Because you are so learned and your life is free from vice, to hear from you encompasses the perfect sacrifice. Dear sir, you know the scriptures and the ancient histories. What's more, you learn them properly from great authorities. You know what Vyas and other learned sages in his line intended us to understand at this decisive time. Because you served them modestly, your gurus favored you, and we feel very certain you can tell us what to do. Dear Sutta, with your wisdom, kindly help us ascertain the highest truth and knowledge as the ancients have explained. Present to us in words that can be plainly understood the truth that will bring people absolute and final good. In this chapter, by the way, this is called Questions by the Sages, they ask six questions. This is the first one. What's the absolute good for ultimate, for everybody? And the answer to that question is our first verse for memorizing. Survive whom some parodhan. That's why that verse is so important. The absolute good for everybody is that by which they can attain love of God. A totally non-sectarian statement. And very useful in showing people how Krishna consciousness is not sectarian. So that's why it's the first verse in their mind. For in this evil age of Kali, people's lives are brief, distressed and lost. They loiter, fight, and fret without relief. So please appraise the scriptures and select essential parts, the finest sacred teachings to uplift the people's hearts. You understand why Krishna, son of Devaki, appears so kindly speak about him for our eager, waiting ears. Describe to us his many incarnations, each in turn, for hearing and discussing them is good for all concerned. Lord Krishna's holy name, though said but once with random breath, can frighten fear itself and free the soul from birth and death. To sanctify it by Ganga bath takes many, many tries, but simple talk of Krishna's pastimes quickly purifies. What person wanting freedom from this dreadful Kali age would miss the chance to listen to a Krishna-conscious soul? Since learned souls like you can see Lord Krishna's deeds and grace, please tell us how he manifests to suit each time and place. The topics of Lord Krishna are transcendent and sublime, and those with taste for Krishna love to hear them all the time. With elder brother Balaram and costumed as a man, Lord Krishna rendered wondrous deeds. Explain them if you can. Quite soon this age of Kali shall destroy society. So kindly speak of Krishna, which itself is piety. As Providence has sent you, be the captain of our ship and sail us through this sea of faults, past Kali's fearsome grip. Dear Sita, Lord Sri Krishna, author of the Vedic code, has left our mortal planet for his own sublime abode. Now who will safeguard higher truths? Will wisdom persevere, or will religious principles now fully disappear? Why Sita thank, that was chapter 1, now here's chapter 2. Why Sita thank the sages for their questions with these words? Whatever I say henceforward is simply what I heard from Sukadeva Goswami, everybody's inspiration. I'll speak about him often in the course of this narration. When Jnanin realized Sukadeva gave up his family ties, his learned father Vyas chased after him with plaintive cries. But only echoes answered, and his wise, indifferent son departed home for good, his training rituals undone. And here's just a little bit about Sukadeva Goswami. There's very little in the first canto about Sukadeva. There are chapters and chapters about Maharaj Parikshit. Just these little brief mentions of Sukadeva Goswami. And this is the first scene. He's in the womb of his mother for 16 years. And finally, he is induced to leave the womb by, because he's already, Brahman realized, he's just staying in there and saying, why should I go in there? And so then Vyas narrates the pastimes of Krishna, and Sukadeva becomes attracted, so he leaves the womb. But instead of staying around to be raised by his family, he just walks away. He doesn't even stay to get his sacred thread from his father. So this is the scene. Sukadeva is walking naked, walking away from home. His father is chasing after him, calling, wait, come back, come back. And this pastime is also elaborated on a little bit later in the text. Now Vyas had summed the Vedas in concise and sacred codes, concerned that they would be misused. He thereafter composed a natural analysis, the finest Vedic cream, the Bhagavad, a book by which mankind could be redeemed. Though Sukadeva assimilated Bhagavad at home, he later spoke its vital words when he was on his own, to help bewildered people struggling in a troubled age. The Bhagavat thus comes from Sukadeva, the foremost sage. Before reciting Bhagavat and overcoming sin, I worship Lord Narayan and his transcendental twin, along with Mother Saraswati, queen of education, as well as Sri Vyas, who first compiled the whole narration. So this, of course, is the invocation verse of chanted this morning. The questions you have raised are in themselves our very goal. Such questions deal with Krishna and can satisfy the soul. The foremost goal that you or any person can obtain is serving Krishna lovingly, as I shall now explain. This service must be selfless and continue constantly to satisfy a seeking soul to maximum degree. Anyone recognize that verse? What is that verse? Nityavaikuntham Parodharma, right? That's our first verse to memorize. When you serve Krishna with devotion, he at once reveals the wisdom of detachment from this world and its appeal. But if you lack the interest to fulfill Lord Krishna's will, then all your work for money comes eventually to nil. Money seems less urgent when your love of God commences. Lord Krishna's servant uses it, but not to serve the senses. To live to please the senses is both needless and untruth. For what's the good of human life if not to learn the truth? The truth is one, yet known to man in three distinctive ways. Great scholars know Brahman, or Krishna's all-pervading rays. Great yogis know the Supersoul, the Lord who dwells within. But devotees know Krishna, from whom everything begins. His service brings the highest truth, devotees realize, for serving Krishna purely has made them detached and wise. Whatever mode of life you live, as path or skills prescribe, your work becomes perfected when the Lord is satisfied. So fix your mind on Krishna, who protects his devotees. And here, remember, glorify and serve him constantly. Beholding others slice the knot of transient addictions, what person would not want to hear of Krishna with attention? Serving those enlightened souls whose hearts are truly pure will make your taste to hear of Krishna even more secure. And as you gain a taste to hear the virtues of the Lord, Lord Krishna from within removes illusion in accord. Anyone recognize that verse? It's not the phrase to avoid virtue. The other invocation virtue chant. A daily class in Bhagavad and service to the pure will nurse the ailing heart until it grows completely cured. By simply hearing topics of Lord Krishna every day, your dormant love for him will thrive and never go away. Then service to Lord Krishna, whose descriptions are sublime, shall root itself within your heart until the end of time. And once such loving service is established in your heart, the ill effects of nature's modes diminish and depart. As lust, desire, and greediness are swept out of your way, you move ahead to goodness and great happiness each day. In touch with pure devotion and relieved of low desire, and steeped in Krishna science, you'll be thoroughly inspired. You'll pierce the knot of false attachment, elevate your soul, and end the chain of karma as your faith takes solid hold. Throughout the ages, striving transcendentalists delight in satisfying Krishna as their dormant love ignites. That's the end of chapter 2, now we're entering chapter 3. Such persons serve Lord Krishna in his absolute position, untouched by good or dark or passion, nature's three divisions. As raw wood is surpassed by smoke and smoke surpassed by fire, in this way passion betters dark, while good remains still higher. Lord Brahma, ruling passion, engineers the whole creation. Lord Shiva, ruling darkness, brings about its devastation. And in between, Lord Vishnu, ruling goodness, oversees. Lord Vishnu is Lord Krishna. Serving him will set you free. In darkness or in passion, one serves ancestors or gods to build up wealth and dynasty, deceptive, worldly frauds. Though sages hold all others in the highest veneration, they give to Krishna, not to God, exclusive adoration. Lord Krishna is the certain aim of scriptural decrees. Lord Krishna is the goal of Vedic fire, rains, and ghee. Lord Krishna is the purpose of the mystic's meditation. And ultimately, Krishna is a worker's compensation. The knowledge of Lord Krishna is the highest to be known. And penances you practice should be done for him alone. Lord Krishna is religion, now that your religion's right. To state it very simply, Krishna is the goal of life. So that's actually the end of chapter 2, not chapter 3. Conceiving this mundane creation, Krishna has designed both actions and reactions, bouncing back and forth in true time. On seeing us entangled in our karma and travail, the Lord will often visit as a king might tour a jail. As blazing fire permeates the wood that it consumes, Lord Krishna as the Supersoul pervades this world of doom. He seems to be so many, though in fact he's only one, just as a thousand water pots reflect a single sun. Within the heart of every soul, the Supersoul observes the soul pursuing matter and the trouble he incurs. Lord Krishna creates planets full of gods and men and beasts, and incarnates among them so the good may be released. Lord Krishna forms a cloud of matter in the spirit sky and enters it as Vishnu, so all souls are purified. A lotus stem appears from Vishnu's navel as he rests, from which the cosmic engineer, Brahma, then manifests. The gateway of the devotees know Vishnu's sacred resting form becomes the gateway for Lord Krishna's incarnations one by one. Lord Krishna's countless incarnations come eternally, like rivulets descending from a never-ending sea. Though all are Krishna's portions, Krishna still remains supreme. He comes to smash the demons so his servants are redeemed. To tell how Krishna manifests in any of these ways with heartfelt pure devotion in the night or in the day makes all the bitter suffering the soul has long endured received within a moment by this transcendental cure. The Bhagavat is also Krishna. Vyas has now revealed Lord Krishna's incarnation in the literary field. Vyas taught it to Sukadev, and I heard everything when Sukadev recited it before a dying king. The Bhagavat is brilliant as the sun that slays the night, that fell on us when Krishna chose to leave our mortal sight. Though truth and goodness may have gone with Krishna to his realm, the Bhagavat lights up the dark. We won't be overwhelmed. When Sukadev spoke to Bhagavat, I gave my rapt attention. Now I, his servant Sutta, make this faithful repetition. So that is the introduction to the Bhagavat. And this verse comes at the very end of this third chapter that we just read. So let us recite this, please. Krishna Padama Pagate Dharma Jnana Dipisaha Kalau Nashta Dishamesha Ranarko Duno Dita Krishna Swadhamma Pagate Dharma Jnana Dipisaha Kalau Nashta Dishamesha Param Narko Duno Dita Narko Duno Dita. Krishna in Krishna Pradhama on abode Bhagate having returned Dharma religion Jnana knowledge Adithi combined together, Saha, along with, Kalau, in the Kali Yuga, Nasta Disham, a person who have lost their sight, Saha, all these, Purana Arata, the Purana which is brilliant like the sun, Aduna, just now, Uditaha has arisen. Translation. The Bhagavat Purana is as brilliant as the sun, and it has arisen just after the departure of Lord Krishna to his own abode, accompanied by religion, knowledge, and so forth. Persons who have lost their vision due to the dense darkness of ignorance in the age of Kali shall get light in this Purana. Let's read this again together, please. The Bhagavat Purana is as brilliant as the sun, has arisen just after the departure of Lord Krishna to his own abode, accompanied by religion, knowledge, and so forth. Persons lost their vision due to the dense darkness of ignorance in the age of Kali shall get light in this time. Third quote. What's that to be at page now? Lord Sri Krishna has his eternal dham, or abode, where he eternally enjoys himself with his eternal associates and paraphernalia. And his eternal abode is a manifestation of his internal energy, whereas the material world is a manifestation of his external energy. When he descends on the material world, he displays himself with all paraphernalia in his internal potency, which is called Atmamaya. In the Bhagavad Gita, the Lord says that he descends by his own potency, Atmamaya. His form, name, fame, paraphernalia, abode, and so forth are not, therefore, creations of matter. He descends to reclaim the fallen souls and to re-establish codes of religion which nature directly enacted by him. Except for God, no one can establish the principles of religion. Either he or a suitable person empowered by him can dictate the codes of religion. Real religion means to know God, our relation with him, and our duties in relation with him, and to know ultimately our destination after leaving this material body. The conditioned souls who are entrapped by the material energy hardly know all these principles of life. Most of them are like animals, engaged in eating, thinking, fearing, and mating. They are mostly engaged in sense enjoyment under the pretension of religiosity, knowledge, or salvation. They are still more blind in the present age of quarrel, or Kali Yuga. In the Kali Yuga, the population is just a royal addition of the animals. They have nothing to do with spiritual knowledge or godly religious life. They are so blind that they cannot see anything beyond the jurisdiction of the subtle mind, intelligence, or ego. But they are very much proud of their advancement of knowledge, science, and material prosperity. They can risk their lives to become a dog or hog just after leaving the present body, for they have completely lost sight of the ultimate aim of life. The personality of Godhead, Sri Krishna, appeared before us just a little prior to the beginning of Kali Yuga, and returned to his eternal home practically at the commencement of Kali Yuga. While he was present, he exhibited everything by his different activities. He spoke the Bhagavad Gita specifically and eradicated all pretentious principles of religiosity. And, prior to his departure from this material world, he empowered Sri Vyasadeva through Narada to compile the messages of Srimad Bhagavatam. And thus both the Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam are like torch bearers for the blind people of this age. In other words, if men in this age of Kali want to see the real light of life, we must take to these two books only, and their aim of life will be fulfilled. Bhagavad Gita is the preliminary study of the Bhagavatam, and Srimad Bhagavatam is the sunam bonum of life, Lord Sri Krishna personified. We must therefore accept Srimad Bhagavatam as the direct representation of Lord Krishna. One who can see Srimad Bhagavatam can also see Lord Sri Krishna in person. They are identical. Srila Prabhupada's translation and so forth. This Bhagavat Purana is as brilliant as the sun, and it has arisen just after the departure of Lord Krishna to his own abode, accompanied by religion, knowledge, and so forth. Persons who have lost their vision due to the dense darkness and ignorance in the age of Kali shall get light from this Purana. This verse comes at the end of a chapter called Krishna is the Source of All Incarnations, chapter 3. Our summarized book excludes the list of the various avatars which are mentioned in the original. So we didn't go through all of the various incarnations that are listed in our summary class, mostly because they are covered later in Srimad Bhagavatam. So we'll get to those in later cantos. I think there are some 20 incarnations or thereabouts listed in the third chapter. But after listing all of them, Sutta Goswami speaks a very important verse. And it is, by the way, Sutta speaking in throughout the first canto. It is not Sukadeva. Sukadeva doesn't say a word until the second canto. And then he speaks the rest. But Sutta is speaking all this in the introductory section of the first canto. So as the sages of Nandi Chiranya have asked him, tell us about Krishna's incarnation. So he lists all of the incarnations in summary. And then at the end he says, Ete Chamsa Kala Humsa, Krishna's two Bhagavan points. Anyone know the meaning of that famous sloka? Are just parts, plenary parts of Krishna. And Krishna's two Bhagavan Swayam. He is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He is the source of all incarnation. That line is very, very frequently quoted by Srila Prabhupada in his lectures and classes. Krishna Tu Bhagavan Swayam. He is directly the personality of Godhead. So we've just read about all of these various avatars and incarnations. And then we come to this phrase, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So we say that frequently amongst ourselves, the devotees, we say it and hear it. But what is the meaning of that? It means that there are many personalities of Godhead. There are many avatars and many appearances of Krishna in all kinds of situations and all species of life and time and place. But of them all, Krishna's two Bhagavan Swayam. So who would this be important to next? What group of people would particularly benefit from hearing this story? Yeah, right, exactly. The Hindu community will appreciate it. I was just reading a magazine from a international Hindu association, and the editorial says, you know, he's trying to present how Bhagavad Gita is the one scripture that can bring the world together. And then but in the course of his editorial, he says, in the Bhagavad Gita, the supreme reality, parentheses, personified by Krishna, says, completely misses the point. That is the prevailing idea of Krishna, that at best he's a representative of Brahma. And even though this foolish person is quoting the Bhagavad Gita, he completely neglects the part of the Gita where Krishna says that fools think that I have assumed this form of personality. Okay? It's so explicit. There's no other way to interpret this verse. There's a saying in Christianity that goes, we both read Bible day and night, you see black and I see white. So here's somebody reading Bhagavad Gita who doesn't see Krishna at all, or sees Krishna in this very remote role, just another representative of Brahman, like so many other gods. So this is a reality. If you're going to be Krishna conscious, you will encounter people who have these misunderstandings. So right at the outset, the sages ask about incarnation. Sutta explains about them, and then he says that Krishna is the source of all of them, and then he says this verse, that Krishna is, the Bhagavad Purana is brilliant as the sun. Now, why would he bring this up in the chapter on incarnation? Yes, Krishna is the source of all incarnations, but why the Bhagavad in particular? Yes, that's okay, but this is a better answer I'm getting for. This is actually another avatar. Srimad Bhagavatam is another avatar of Krishna. And that's what Prabhupada mentions at the end of the purport. So that's why it's found here in this verse on the incarnation. So in the literary field, Bhagavatam is non-different from Krishna, and more importantly, it is the Kali Yuga avatar. Now, of course, we know that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is Krishna's incarnation in the age of Kali. But at this time, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu had not appeared. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is predicted in the 11th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam. So much later in the text, he's mentioned that he will be coming in another 2,000 years. But right from the outset of Kali Yuga, Bhagavat is the incarnation of Krishna for us. And that's why it appears in this third chapter. Any questions on anything we've covered so far? How does the incarnation Chaitanya Mahaprabhu brought to Bhagavatam? Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is described as the ideal creature of Srimad Bhagavatam. That's your Bhaktivinoda Thakur's phrase. Which is printed in the introduction of Srimad Bhagavatam. Yes, please. The people who worship Shiva and other demigods are supreme. How do we present our point that Krishna is supreme? That's why this verse is helpful that I'm really discussing. One just before this, A.K. comes to Kalokya. Krishna, just remember, Krishna is Sri Bhagavan's client. Just like in court, when a lawyer can cite another case, then the judge is not only swayed, but really forced to comply. So similarly, if we can present that the Bhagavad Purana says Krishna is Sri Bhagavan's client, you know, we're trying to learn 3-4 verses in their entirety, but if you can't do that, if you can learn one or two lines, then that's a very good one. So you present your case. There's also important references on the Bhagavad Gita on this question. Krishna says that those who worship other gods are misled, and they are meaning to worship me alone, but their knowledge is inferior. Very explicit. Avidhi Purvakam. Their knowledge is inferior. So by presenting Shastric evidence, that's the best way. Now, we have to be really intelligent in presenting Krishna consciousness in the sense that, as the old adage goes, a man convinced against his will is of the same opinion still. In other words, we will not attract and convince as many people to be Krishna conscious by defeating them philosophically as we will by making a good relationship with them. We should let people know that our happiness in Krishna consciousness does not depend upon what they do or don't do. You understand? And that way, they'll want to find out what is making us feel upset. So we don't need anyone to validate our faith. So if people worship the demigods, then they worship the demigods. Krishna even says it's better than nothing. So we just appreciate it. Okay? Yes, you worship Shiva, you worship Brahma. Even though Krishna says this here, I'm worshiping Krishna because he says this, you do what you like. You understand? Okay. You gotta worship Krishna. You gotta worship Krishna. Yeah. You know the old story of the sun and the wind? They had a competition. They wanted to see who was stronger, the sun or the wind. And so, the wind challenged the sun. There's a man with a coat. Watch me take his coat off. So the wind started blowing and blowing and blowing. And the harder it blew, the harder the man was pulling onto his coat. Tighter and tighter. So the sun said, all right, now it's my turn. And the sun just began shining brightly and brightly and brightly. So the man just took off his coat. So we try to blow people away from their Christianity or their worship of demigods or their impersonalism. We try to blow them away by scriptural wind. You know, they're just going to hold on to the position more tightly. But if we show that we are actually understanding spirituality and living it, they'll just naturally be attracted. Yes, they refer to their scriptures. So then we have to get on the same footing. And that's why Bhagavad Gita is so important. Because, as it said, there are 1 billion Hindus and 1 billion varieties of Hinduism. Okay. But one of the things that every Hindu will agree on is that Bhagavad Gita is the top scripture. So if we know Bhagavad Gita and can quote Bhagavad Gita, we can simply ask people, so do you accept the Bhagavad Gita? Oh yes, I accept Bhagavad Gita. Okay, well in the Gita, Krishna says this and this and this. What do you think? Okay. Yes. Was Prabhupada blowing people away and also brilliant as the sun? Very good question. The answer is yes. He could do both. And Prabhupada said that, you see, sometimes he would be very, very strong in his language. He said, we kick on the boot, on the face of the scientists with boots. So sometimes neophyte devotees will say, oh, I kick on your face with boots. But it doesn't have the same effect. and when he spoke very strongly, Prabhupada said that, he said, I'm an old man. If I say something strongly, they will say, oh, he's an old man, he's a little grouchy. But you cannot say that. You see? So, Krishna consciousness is personal. And it's self-realization. If we are actually advancing in Krishna consciousness, we don't have to become like Prabhupada. We don't have to become like some other devotee that we admire. We just have to become who we are in relation to Krishna. And everyone is unique. Every person is unique. As Homer tells Bart, You're unique, son, just like everybody else. So my point is that your own spiritual person, the more your own spiritual personality comes out, the more you will be successful in your presentation of Krishna consciousness. It's not a matter of imitating. Imitating is called anusara, to imitate. Now, anusara means to take the essence. So we want to take the essence, which is to love Krishna. To love Krishna and serve Krishna in our own way, in our own unique way. That's our success. Okay, Paul? Because the devotees take on the mood of their spiritual master. That's natural by association, but it does not mean that we become our spiritual master. One of my very dear friends, first became a devotee, used to a Bhagavatam class, and he had so many devotees, he picked up the Bombay nod, you know? Mm. And sometimes Prabhupada would be speaking and he would speak with very deep concentration. He would go, So the devotee, who was all 23 years old at the time, he would go, But sometimes after going, he would fall asleep while I was giving class. So it wasn't quite the same potency. So yeah, we take on the mood of our spiritual master, but Prabhupada wanted us to use our own intelligence, to use our own talent in serving Krishna. That's the essence, the sara, the cream of what he was teaching. He didn't emphasize so much the externals of even Vaishnava dress or haircuts or tila as a necessity for being Krishna conscious. It's nice, he appreciated it, but he also was flexible in those things. You know? So according to our particular station in life, our particular set of circumstances, the individual expression of our devotion will be unique to us. That's why, in other words, it's not so simple, but it's that easy to be Krishna conscious, just wearing a certain set of clothes, or having a certain haircut, or whatever. You know, we wouldn't bother with chanting 15 rounds and studying Srimad Bhagavatam. It would be the International Society for Devotees and Sari. But it's much deeper than that. You know, what do we want to do for Krishna in the core of our heart? And Srimad Bhagavatam is wonderful, brings that out. That's the reason for the study of Srimad Bhagavatam. Not the praise for vibration, it's in Bhagavad Gita. Bhagavati is most okay. By regularly hearing Bhagavatam, rendering service to the devotees, all that is inauspicious to the heart is destroyed, and devotional service becomes irrevocably accepted. Never be changed. Okay? Next. Mark? Determination. Utsaha Nishchaya Dhaya. In the next of instruction, Rupa Goswami gives six things that are critical for success in devotional service. So let's just review those. Utsaha is enthusiasm. Nishchaya, determination. Dhairya, patience means that I'm going to serve Krishna no matter what the external circumstances may be. It's because, you see, whatever we can do for Krishna is very insignificant when you think about it, isn't it? I mean, think about it for a moment. Mahavishnu is lying here in that one corner of the spiritual sky which is dedicated to the conditioned soul. And he's asleep. And as he sleeps, countless universes emanate from his body. And then and when he exhales, they go out. When he inhales, they come back in. And so that one breath of Mahavishnu is this enormous lifespan of Lord Brahma, which is trillions of years. And that one breath is going on. Let me quote Srila Prabhupada. He put it like this, speaking to one disciple. He said, Mahavishnu is emanating millions of universes. And in every universe, there are so many planets. And on a And amongst all these millions of planets within the universe, there's this one insignificant planet called Earth. And on Earth, there are so many countries. And in every country, there are so many cities. So here in this one country of America, in this one city of Los Angeles, there are so many neighborhoods. And in every neighborhood, there are so many houses. And in this one particular house, in this one particular neighborhood, in one particular room, there is one devotee named Kamal Krishna Goswami, who is thinking he is very important. I'm just quoting him by name because Prabhupada said that. And he quotes it in his memoirs as a wonderful moment in his life. So we are thinking our things are very important. Oh, shall I wear this today or that today? Oh, I have a cold. Shall I go out today or shall I stay home? You know, our minds are very preoccupied by things which are important for our lives, but in the greater scheme of things, are not that significant. So my point is, in the execution of devotional service, if we understand our position and just try to please Krishna in every circumstance, that is our success. We really can't do much to change this world. There's so much chaos in this world, Kali Yuga, so many ignorant people. What can we do? If we can touch one or two lives in the course of our life, then we'll be very dear efficient. Amongst all devotees, those who speak the message of Bhagavad Gita amongst the devotees are very dear to me. So what if there are no devotees? Well, again, referring to Kamal Krishna Maharaj, he went to Houston many years ago, and there weren't many devotees there at that time. And he wanted association, so he said, I'm going to have to make my own association. And then he recruited so many wonderful devotees, and just by presenting Krishna consciousness very purely and strongly. So that's determination. That circumstances may be very favorable or unfavorable. Still we go on and serve Krishna according to the situation. According to our, that's determination. Okay, who asked that question? My boss did it. What should we hold on to make sure that our chanting is as good as possible? That's the essence of your question. There's so many material formulas you might go to. Prabhupada answered that question by saying that we should chant like a child crying for its mother. So if we realize we're in a dangerous situation, our adrenaline goes up, right? Our mind becomes focused because it's a matter of life and death. If we chant like that, that will give us something to hold on to very firmly. Not allowing our mind to wonder, well, how will I get some money, or how will I do this today or that today? You know, but chanting as if our lives depend on it. That's an art and a practice. But if I had to answer your question with one thing, that would, all those points come from better chanting. Those are benefits of better chanting. Depending on the affirmation, the one that we read this morning was more like ways to purify our lives so that we can be more able to call out for Krishna's purity. Not being envious of other living beings, not being violent or things like that. Those are aids for calling out for Krishna's purity. Not the essence in itself. Byproduct. Okay. Any other questions? Will we wrap up? Yes, Luigi. Two different things. The personality of Kali is a separate person, and this age personified. We'll meet him in the later chapters of the first canto. Whereas Kali, the goddess Kali, is top. What is it? Kali and Kali, right? Different pronunciation, different person. So Kali is Georgia. Luigi, with me here? Luigi? Hey. Luigi, you listen?
Okay.
Yeah, Kali is Georgia, the material energy personified. Kali is the age of quarrel personified, two different persons. It's not the age of Georgia. Well, definitely, goddess Kali is very popular in the Kali Yuga. Gopis went to worship Durga Kajayani to have Krishna as her husband. So how does that fit into Krishna consciousness? It fits in very nicely in that it shows we can do anything, just about anything, for Krishna. In other words, the gopis were following the Vedic ritual for a particular desire to be fulfilled, but they were doing it for Krishna. So if we are performing those rituals without the goal of pleasing Krishna, just for the goal of a material gain, then we have we're on a lower rung of the ladder. This verse we read at the end of the second chapter of the first canto, Vasudeva Paro Karma, Vasudeva Paro Jnana, Vasudeva Paro Tapa, Vasudeva Paro Veda. Krishna is the goal of the Vedas, Krishna is the goal of sacrifices, Krishna is the goal of knowledge, Krishna is the goal of austerity. Vasudeva, 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 it's a very beautiful verse like that. If we are attached to worshiping the demigods, yes. If we're attached to other things that are not covered by the regular principles, we can do most of those things for Krishna one way or another. So there's a great deal of flexibility beyond the four regular principles. But because we are trying to get the shortcut to Krishna, we're reading Srimad Bhagavatam and Bhagavad Gita. We're not bothering with the worship of the demigods. Krishna says that in the Bhagavad Gita, for all the purposes of a small pond are at once served by a great reservoir of water. So in the same way, all the purposes of the Vedas are served to one who knows the purpose behind them. So the worship of demigods, having a good husband, whatever we may want, these are all ultimately things that will lead us to Krishna consciousness. Living a pakka life, dharma, life being religious. Later in this purport, at the end, Prabhupada talks about dharma, artha, kama, moksha. Trying to be religious, and making money out of it, and then getting into sense gratification, and then renouncing the whole thing, and starting again with dharma. It's just a cycle. So that like a dog chasing the tail, it's really not going anywhere. We keep trying to satisfy this material desire, this material desire, this material desire. Even if we're doing it religiously and not hurting anybody, it's not getting us anywhere very quickly. So, that's the idea. Thank you very much. I think I'll stop there. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Well, this is a challenge. People like to, the standard format for Bhagavatam classes will have a verse, read the purport, have a lecture, and a discussion. And people have faith and to ask whatever they like. You don't want to eliminate that. But with these other things we're doing, we won't be as long. Prabhupada used to get very short Bhagavatam classes. You can listen to them, they're very often about 20 minutes. So I'm going to try to condense things a little bit, but it's an experiment. We'll have to see. If you're getting the flow of the text, that's my main concern. Is it worth the time to spend getting the flow of the text? There's no substitute for reading Prabhupada's Bhagavatam verse by verse, page by page, purport to purport. There's no substitute for that. The problem is, if we did that, and we did one verse a day, or maybe two, in 7 months we would have covered pretty much what we covered today. maybe another chapter or two. So most of you don't have the luxury that we had 30 or 40 years ago. I'm moving in the temple forever. That's my life. I'm here in the temple. That's my move. That was pretty much our life plan. And things don't always exactly work out that way. So it makes a lot of sense to do what you're doing. I think each one of you has a very cohesive life plan, some more than others, but taking some time in your life right now to get a really good overview of Srimad Bhagavatam. It's a shortcut way to enhance your Krishna consciousness. And then you have the rest of your life to go back and review canto by canto, chapter by chapter, verse by verse. Every purport is extremely valuable. Yes. If somebody talks about Guru Maharaj, you know what they're referring to, or Krishna Bhagavatam, or Lord Ram, or so many. So yeah, that's the idea. You'll be at least acquainted with all the pastimes in the past. But like I said, it is an experiment. Why are we doing it? Because Prabhupada said, there's two schools of thought. Some people say we should do everything just like Prabhupada did. And that's fine. That's fine. And for some people that's the best way to do it. And then this, on the other end of the spectrum, Prabhupada said that we should task our brain, to come up with innovative ways to spread Krishna consciousness. So that means some trial and error. We don't want to the principle is read Srimad Bhagavatam. That we can't change. But the detail is exactly how we study it. Prabhupada did it in a certain way. And he did it in a way that was appropriate for that time and circumstance. And people are basically saying, I'm just staying in the temple for the rest of my life. Okay, good, let's do one verse a day.
You know where the red dot is?
But that's not so popular anymore. Most people are saying, okay, well, at most I can get a year or two to learn Krishna consciousness. And I've got to go on with my life. And so, how much can we do in a year or two? That we're trying. Considered a contamination or something to have to have contact with your family. Yeah, do you recall it, Steve? Big Maya, to have contact with your family. Big Maya. To have any contact with your family. Yeah.
Cool. Isn't it that the family will be in conflict with the spirituality of the individual? The Bible is full of that. It's just a part you never hear about. But, I'm talking about the New Testament. Jesus' teaching. He was ripping families apart left and right. He said, they call me the Prince of Peace, but I say I have come to just put man against man, a brother against brother, father against son. You know that verse? No, I never quote that verse. But the point is that when you've matured enough to understand, Bhaktivinoda Thakur writes about the parallel rail, basically, of your spiritual life and your material life. They need to be going together like a train track. You can't have just one rail and have the train going on this one wheel. it needs to be grounded and balanced. It doesn't mean that spiritual life doesn't mean we have to treat our families badly. But if we go home to our family and we go out to restaurants and eat all kinds of foods that are against the regular principle, if we go to family parties and drink beer and say, well, I'm just relating to my family, then we're not very serious about this. So it's a great art. A lot of it depends on how close the family is. If you're really close to your family, they will accept you no matter what. Right? And one example of that is a good friend, Bhunadwani Maharaj, he's from Buffalo. And he's got his mother trained after so many years. When he goes to visit his mother, sometimes he'll say, George, is this offered? If you've got a family like that, like Italian families, in Italy, one person joins, the whole family joins. Some other countries like that too. Oh, okay, he's joining, let's all join. Let's all go, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna. I'll give you an example. The question is, how can you respect your parents and still, if they're against Krishna consciousness, and still be Krishna conscious? The first principle is, of being a devotee is that Prabhupada was here in Gainesville,
And the reporter asked him, how do I tell your true followers? He could have answered that in many ways. And Hare Krishna, where's Elog, whatever. He said, my true follower is a real gentleman. So the first principle of Krishna consciousness is we don't treat anybody badly. We treat everybody kindly. If somebody is attacking us, we defend ourselves. Right? But in general, we're giving people love and affection and appreciation because they're part and parcel of the Krishna. So many times the hardest person in the world to respect is the one that you're closest to, your parents. So one very nice devotee, she became a devotee and her parents were not happy, but they accepted it. But then she wanted to marry a devotee and they said, no, we don't want you to marry this person. So she's very intelligent. She said, all right, I won't marry this person. In fact, I won't marry anybody. And so they said, all right, you can marry this person. She said very seriously, I won't marry anybody. That's right, I will respect your wishes. I won't marry, but I'm not going to, I won't marry this person, and I won't marry anyone else. So, you see, by intelligence, she was able to deal with that. She was able to be respectful and be Christian conscious. But she didn't have to spend 2 days with my mother. So yet to stand the right for 2 months after 38 years of time to move. But anyway, the way we deal with it is we get up at 3:30 and go out and take a long walk. Oh, we get up, we do our writing and reading early, and we go take a long japa walk, stand all of our rounds, and come back about 8 in the morning. And then people are just stirring around our house. So then we can be there for them. You know, we might have to take a nap a little bit later in the day. And we may not stay up late if they're doing something past 10, when we're too tired of going to bed at night. You know? But otherwise, we can be all smiling and cordial and interactive with our family. So that's the trick. One incident where Prabhupada was traveling with some devotees in India, and they got into the house, they made a long drive, and they got into the house a little bit late, and the host served them this huge feast of really heavy food. And Prabhupada ate a little bit, and the devotees ate very ravenously. And the next morning, at 5:30, Prabhupada rang his bell to call the servant. The servant woke up and got up. Where is everybody? Why was no one at Mangal Arati? They're all asleep. The Prabhupada says, just eat the karmi poison. And by eating all the food which has not been offered properly and everything, he said immediately that he kind of was infected. And so he had them all get up, get showered, and he left immediately. They're supposed to stay for several days, and he just left like that. Because he can see that his disciples could not keep their Christian consciousness in that circumstance. So that's the test of our good
question. Okay. 9:00. We'll have a great day for Krishna. I hope.